Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Three and Out, your national NFL podcast featuring three sports media pros. Me, Ty Shelter from 538, joined by Samantha Bunton of NBC Sports and Michael Shoddy of the 33rd team. It's time for this week's big show where we go long on big NFL topics, and we have a big guest for you, Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider. Super stoked to talk to Matt. And, you know, we will talk about this draft, next draft, all that stuff. Tis the season. For looking back and looking forward, as we are looking at our rosters, we're looking at training camps, we're trying to figure out how these teams did, what holes are left, how they're going to fill them, and how they're going to do this upcoming year. Before we get to any of the breaking news, before we get to finishing our over, under, or push segment that we did live on Monday morning, make sure you're subscribed. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever it is you get your podcast, subscribe to 3 and Out. Just go to 3outpod.com for all of our episodes, all of our links, our archive, everything there, written articles we've done, 3outpod.com, same as our Twitter handle, 3outpod, and our Instagram handle, also 3outpod. So guys, a topic I wanted to touch on, we have a little bit of news, and we should just pounce on it like a mouse on a crumb of chocolate chip cookie on the kitchen floor. Carry it back to our little mouse hole and treasure it, because news in the NFL is very rare at this point. Actual news that means anything. The Eagles signed free agent James Bradberry, a cornerback who had recently been cut by the New York Giants. So we have an in-division move. And I have kind of a correlating rant about why he was available to begin with. Do you guys want to give your reactions to this first, or just let me go off and you can react to me?
Oh, I think you should. I think you have the strongest opinion on this.
Okay.
You should let it fly.
All right. I was going to anyway, but I wanted to have the I wanted the clearance. I want to have the consent from you guys to just go ahead and pop off, because that's what I'm going to do. So when James Bradberry was cut, he was cut because he didn't have, he was unable to come to agreement with the Giants on a big fat multi-year extension. Basically, from what was reported, you know, he's looking for like a market setting type deal, a top market type deal. And hey, he's, you know, 29, a good starting cornerback. He's the Giants' number one corner. And it was not happening. Going into this last year, it's going to be a killer. And they were unable to come to an agreement. Giants are pretty tight against the cap. And they cut him. They cut a starter. And that's kind of always been the, you know, this is the demarcation point for a team in cap hell, right? When they're having to outright cut quality players they would rather keep around. Well, Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus quote tweeted this with, "Ooh, bad day for the cap is not real mindset." And I kind of got in his mentions and chirped at him a little, and some other people chirped at him too, and he chirped back. And you know, it is what it is. We're on the football Twitters. We're bantering. Like, this is it. And here's the thing. The reason when we say cap is not real, right? Like, obviously the salary cap is literally real. You do have to be under the cap. You just have to be. But the assumption that a lot of people make is that every team is limited by the cap the way they were limited by the cap 10 years ago, right? That signing any multi-year contract was a major commitment that basically meant you were going to be unable to commit to any other players, right? And that contracts and signings and talent had to be evaluated in the lens of, yeah, but how much is this going to cost me? And that every team, every year, wants to spend up to the cap to be as competitive as they possibly can be every single year. Well, that's not true, for a lot of reasons. Basically, all of those things are not true. The way the cap is since the CBA with the slotted rookie deals and the way the cap has jumped and jumped and jumped and jumped. Remember, we had basically a flat cap for like 8, 9, 10 years. It went up a little bit and then went back down when they did the CBA in 2011. So for basically like a 5, 6 year run, it was totally flat, but salaries for individual players, the positions were still going up. So that meant it harder and harder to keep these guys around. Now, you know, the positions are lagging 2, 3, 4, 5 years behind these cap spikes. And we got another one coming in 2 years. That's going to jump about 20%, about $50 extra million is coming. But if the Giants wanted to sign James Bradbury, they could. In fact, it would have been a lot smarter this year's cap wise to sign him to an extension, push a bunch of that money out, kick the can down the road, and have it come off the books in 2 or 3 years when there's an extra $50 million a year to come off of. And instead, they're eating a big cap hit by cutting him. And now the Eagles have jumped in. They signed him to a one-year deal. I don't have exactly the number yet. The Eagles, as per overthecap.com this morning, only had $10 million in cap space. So every dollar they're going to pay James Bradbury is going to come out of that $10 million and leave them with something less than that, which is a pretty low number because as we're still going through and signing draft picks, I don't know if the Eagles have signed all their rookies yet. So like this, you know, that doesn't give you much overhead. So the Eagles are willing to push up into their cap to sign James Bradbury, but the Giants weren't. Why? Here's why. This is the real thing, is that the cap is a cap, but you can get around it if you want to, and you have to want to. The Giants just hit the eject button on a, you know, 3-year rebuild plan 2 years in for like the third time in a row since Tom Coughlin left. They are not going in a direction. They are not going to be competitive soon. They're not going to be a good team that really needs a number one corner, or, you know, needs to upgrade and make Bradbury the number two corner so they can compete with the Cowboys' and the Packers' of the world until 2 or 3 years down the road when they're going to have a lot more money. And, oh, by the way, the reason the Giants are tight against the cap is because they signed a bunch of guys like Leonard Williams and Kenny Golladay to enormous, enormous, you know, 7, 8-figure deals that 9-figure deals that like, don't have, that aren't producing on the field, right? They already have a bunch of terrible contracts. So signing another one for a guy who's not really going to make you any better now, and I guess I should say letting him go won't make you much worse, and won't be a part of whatever is going to be there in 3 years when he's 32 or 33. Like, that's why they don't want to pay him that money. He's asking for top of the market money. He may not be worth top of the market money. Clearly the Eagles didn't want to pay him top of the market money. So in this case, this is just this whole ice, like it puts it all in a microcosm. It's all a little thing where like, okay, yes, the cap is real, but the reason your team isn't signing the player you want them to sign is because they don't want to, not because they can't.
Well, yeah, it's a competitive cycle cap issue, not the cap isn't real issue, because this is really more about the Giants cutting their losses, that they literally cannot pay him or are afraid it will impact whether they will be able to pay somebody next year. That's just not how this is. And, you know, when we say the cap isn't real, it's, you know, I should mention that it's a figurative statement. I think it's very popular in the football world. We all know what this means. Eric knows what this means. And we're not trying to go after Eric. He's a very smart guy. But yeah, this is like, I feel like this all started with that. I think it was the Jarius Byrd contract with the Saints. That was the one that really set everybody off on this. And you're looking at this and you're going, oh man, there's got to be a lot of like willful misunderstanding of this in order to prove that, oh, this is the thing that's going to prove that the Saints, oh, you are beholden to the cap. And then whoops, nope. They wanted to move around the cap, just as you said, so they did. And from the Eagles' perspective, I just want to touch on this quickly because I think this is important too. So the Eagles, I think, see themselves differently than maybe some of the rest of us do. It's odd to push up to the cap the way that they have. And it's odd to go in on stuff like this. And granted, this is a low risk signing. It's, as you mentioned, you know, they weren't necessarily going to pay him anything like what we would consider to be market value multi-year deal. It's a 1-year deal. It's kind of a proven deal for him. So fine for the Eagles, whatever. It's a low stakes thing for both sides. But it is sort of a signal. You think, okay, so they're going to bring him in. They're taking him from sort of a division rival. I don't know that we consider the Giants all that competitive, but we're a little bit, I think, down on the Eagles, or at least compared to where the Eagles are on the Eagles. You're thinking, okay, you're going to set him up opposite Darius Slay. This looks like a team that is signing a bunch of one-year deals for older proven players to make a run, a la Los Angeles Rams, a la Tampa Bay Bucks 2 years ago. Like, let's just go all in. They're right up against the cap. I don't know that I'm that sold on the Eagles. I don't necessarily think it was like a terrible, horrible mistake for them to do this by any stretch, but it definitely is sending out a message that's not translating for me the same way I think it is inside their building.
So this was a move that I think the Eagles didn't have to make, but they wanted to make enough that when James Bradberry hit the market, dots started to get connected almost immediately. And when you have a move like that, where you have a team that, I don't want to say they're pushing all in, but going out and getting AJ Brown is pushing in a little bit. You know, you this is the year you really want to find out if you have what you think you have in Jalen Hurts. And so to do that, you want to have him, you know, talent around him, and you want to have some talent on the other side of the ball. So they had a solid draft. You know, they've got multiple draft picks this year, multiple draft first round draft picks next year. They're really trying to see if this current building plan is what it needs to be. And so when you have that and you want to make sort of the one last move, you want to bring in that James Bradberry because you think he can be that guy, you know, nickel corner who's going to really push your defense over the top after it was not so bad last year. You can do any move you want. You can bring in the Jairus Bird, even though you have like negative cap space. You can bring in the James Bradberry, even though you only have $10 million and still need to sign your draft picks. The cap is such where you can do those things. You're going to be mortgaging something in the future. You can't necessarily do all the things you want to do. You will have to make a hard decision at some point with someone, whether it's a, you know, guy coming off a rookie deal or another position that, you know, is woefully understaffed because you've spent like 27 draft picks on the wide receiver position in the last 5 years. You can't make every move you want, but you can make moves like this. And if James Bradberry had been traded, it would have been like a, you know, a couple of mid-round draft picks. It wouldn't have been this huge, huge deal, but he's was going to get paid anyway. And so now that draft pick stuff is out of the equation, all of a sudden signing him looks like a pretty value deal. And as much as, yeah, it's quote unquote bigger money than maybe people thought, I think this is the sort of move that a team like Philadelphia wants to make where they're at. And I think you were right, Ty, that the Giants are just at a different stage of their existence. They could have brought him back. It's absolutely possible that within the structures of the cap, you could have brought him back. But because he didn't fit into their plans, he is all of a sudden a much bigger fit. And when he gets like two picks off of Danny Dimes later this year, you know, people are going to be going crazy.
Yeah. And I think, I think it's just important to keep in mind throughout all of this that as much as we think of owners as people who sit in the booths on Sundays and, you know, watch that booth in the luxury boxes and you kind of watch their team and have a drink and everything. And for the most part, they at least profess to stay out of the day-to-day operations, you know, with a couple of very notable exceptions. You know, you are still asking, like NFL teams get almost all of the money they're supposed to spend on players from the league in the form of revenue sharing their tickets, revenue sharing, the TV money, all the, you know, the broadcast rights, leagues sold merchandise, you know, worldwide. It's not sold directly by the team. All that stuff gets split up and you just get a big giant, you know, almost $200 million nest egg to be like, here, this will cover all your salaries, right? But that's still money that has to go out the door. And even though you as the general manager might typically be authorized to go ahead and spend that money, at some point, when you're talking about, okay, I'm going to cut a $30 million check on my owner's behalf and then know that and commit that owner to cutting several more 10, 5, 10, you know, 15, whatever million dollar checks down the line, like that is a decision. Not all owners want to spend that money. not all owners want to spend every dollar that they can making their team as competitive as possible every year. Like, that's not necessarily the goal. And it's not that, you know, no NFL owner wants to be uncompetitive, say for some sort of, you know, tanking-esque strategy where, you know, okay, we're going to strip it down to the studs and rebuild. Like, no NFL owner would turn down free wins. But also, like, a lot of these teams are run to be profitable or run to be more profitable or run to be extremely profitable first. And then, you know, competitiveness can be a happy accident, or competitiveness is, you know, fans can have a little competitiveness sometimes as a treat, right? And like, it's important to remember, it's not just the salary cap, it's actual money going out the door. And sometimes some teams just don't want to spend it. All right, we're going to talk to a guy who makes the big bucks in this industry, Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider. And it's not just because he works for the biggest of outlets. It's not just because he's been one of the best and most visible voices. He's also hustling. He's got his own newsletter, which is a fantastic subscription. We are going to pick his brain and can't wait to get to it right here on Three and Out, your national NFL podcast.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Three and Out, your national NFL podcast featuring three sports media pros. It's a big show, midweek big show like we always do. We always have a big guest for you. One of the biggest, Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider, joining us today. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Hey, I'm only like 5'10", so I don't know that I'm the biggest, you know, one of the bigger guests. I think I'm pretty average as far as that stuff goes, but I'm honored to be on with you guys. I'm a huge fan of the newsletter. Obviously a huge fan of Mike T and my guy Shoddy, working with you guys now. So it's an honor to be on with you.
So wanted to ask you, and I've actually been trying to get you on this draft class for a while, but now that the draft is over, kind of doing the wrap up, the final postmortem, what are some of the picks that you didn't necessarily see coming? And maybe when they happened, you were like, oh, that's an interesting pick. But the more you think about the player, the team, the fit between the two, they're just getting you more and more excited. What are some of those players you think we're going to look back and say, you know, it came out of left field, but man, did that end up being a great pick.
Yeah, Shoddy, I think you have to start with Cole Strange. You know, for New England to trade back in round one, it's like, okay, this is what they do. Not that surprising. We'll see. You know, they probably felt like the value was more, you know, in the what you consider the middle of the crop, right? Like 30 to 50. But I think Cole Strange being the pick was the bigger surprise, especially when all off season. And like, the Patriots do a great job. Like, it's a very closed door, you know, front office. They don't talk a lot. There's only like three people in the whole front office, which makes that easier. But everything you did here was, hey, they're probably going to go defense. You know, they were slow in the playoffs. They got exposed in the front seven. They're probably going to go defense. Then they lose JC Jackson and you're like, wow, okay, they're really going defense now. And they come out and they take a guard from UT Chattanooga, who's a hell of a player. But I think that was the biggest surprise. But as you said in your question, in 3 years, you know, if he's playing like an Ali Marpet, who's actually my comp for him, or if he's playing, you know, at a high level like a Trey Smith, who was a steal for Kansas City last year, no one's going to look back and be like, hey, remember when the Patriots drafted him in the first round and everybody said it was a dumb pick? They're going to be like, hey, Bill Belichick is still smarter than all of us. And here's another, you know, kind of example of that. So I think that's one that, I mean, was the biggest, definitely the biggest surprise of the first round for me. Kind of on the flip side of it, I think one that surprised me that, and I know this isn't where you framed your question, but one that surprised me was Washington trading back and drafting a wide receiver, because they traded out of the wide receiver run. We saw Drake London go 8, Garrett Wilson go 10, and we're like, okay, we're in the heart of this wide receiver run. They're sitting there at 11 and they trade back and still take Jahan Dotson. So I think that's one of the moves where, a lot like Jalen Reagor gets compared to all those great receivers from the 2020 draft class. Now we're going to see, I think, Jahan Dotson compared to the guys that were selected around and in that original spot Washington set.
So you mentioned on Twitter that you thought the NFL should potentially move to a draft lottery. And not really, my little antenna went up, but I thought, oh, I could be talked into this. So talk me into it.
Okay, number one, the NFL just spent a week hyping up a schedule release. Okay, and it, like, the place I work, the league's network, like, everyone was like, we're going to make a night of this. And I freaking love it, right? So I'm sitting there last night, and the NBA lottery is dominating my Twitter feed. And I'm like, do you have any idea the kind of numbers an NFL lottery would do? So let's say that Brian Flores is right, and he was offered money to tank. The NFL has to do something about that, right? So the way that I think you can correct for that, while also continuing to feed this offseason frenzy, continuing to dominate the sports calendar and the ratings, is to implement a lottery. And not for picks 1 through 32, but let's say picks 1 through 10, so that the Jacksonville Jaguars are not automatically guaranteed the first overall pick if they have the worst record again next year. You take Jacksonville, you know, the Jets, the Lions, the Texans, and everybody kind of has a weighted opportunity for the first pick. Right now, we're seeing a change in NFL coverage that I know you guys have experienced the same way I have. When I started in this business 12 years ago, the schedule didn't get covered. You know, the owners' meetings really didn't get covered. There wasn't a legal tampering period where you had 3 days of free agency craziness before free agency. The NFL right now has realized that events are moneymakers, and a lottery would be hugely rewarding for them from a money standpoint. I also think it would deter teams from quote unquote tanking. And I think we've probably all been close to situations where a team is maybe not saying they're tanking, but man, they really don't want to win. And you know, the Miami Dolphins are not the first, and they won't be the last. And this is one way that you can kind of combat that.
Well, you're going to put Hugh Jackson even more out of business than he already is, but I'm sold. I'm in. So coming back to the 2022 draft that we just finished, I was curious if you saw anything, this is not really about individual team behavior, but any sort of trends or tendencies, things that we saw in this draft we haven't seen in the past or that really ramped up in this past, sort of go, here's something that teams are starting to do more often that you're noticing, could be anything, could be a position group that is now getting drafted earlier or later, or a strategy of any sort that you think is getting more and more popular for drafts.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it was just a couple years ago that all of us really smart people were saying, don't draft wide receivers in the first round because you can get Michael Thomas in the second round, or you can get A.J. Brown or Deebo Samuel in the second round. And what has changed is the economics of that position at wide receiver now dictates that, much like a quarterback, you kind of need a good one on a rookie deal, you know, or you, if you're going to have a superstar, you have to have a quarterback that's pretty dang good on a rookie deal, kind of like Cincinnati. Now Philadelphia has a similar situation. So I think the receiver position is the one that has changed the most, where, I mean, I know that there was one NFL team in the NFC East that did a study on wide receivers in the second round and how it was a better bargain. And like, that's where you want to take your shots, right? Because there were so many first round busts. That thinking has changed very, very quickly. I mean, almost as quickly as the 6'2 quarterback threshold changed. So I think that's kind of the fascinating trend right now. You know, we saw six go in the top 20 this year, and I think next year we'll probably see something close to the same. And it's to the point where when people ask me on pre-draft interviews, what's the strongest position in the draft? I don't even say wide receiver anymore, because it's wide receiver every year. Guys are coming out of high school more prepared. They're coming out of college more prepared. I mean, hell, Shoddy, when we were a Bleacher Report, rookies didn't contribute at the wide receiver position. Yeah. It was rare for an Alshon Jeffrey to have a big year or Anquan Boldin to have a big year. And now it's like, you know, you expect Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase out of these players.
You know, Matt, on our show document here, I have my next question teed up, and it was, where are they hiding the wide receiver factory? Right? Like, what? Where
Columbus, Ohio. I don't know if you guys have been there. That's where they're hiding it. It's kind of this little rust belt town. If you know, it's growing, but it's, you know, not Cincinnati. It's not Cleveland. That's where the wide receiver factory is at.
Right. Well, so because it's like, you know, I remember back in 2014, we thought it was like a totally unprecedented wide receiver draft. You know, you have Odell Beckham, but you also have Sammy Watkins and Brandon Cooks. Just go down this list. There's six first rounders, Mike Evans. And the closest one to not working out was Kelvin Benjamin, and he had a 1,000-yard rookie year, right? So it was like, wow, this is like unbelievable. And now that's kind of the new normal. You know, it's 6, 7, 8, you know, first round caliber prospects in every single draft. And, you know, they're going in and they're making impacts. So, you know, you kind of hinted at it about high school and college. Like, how have they changed? Is this where, you know, they're not funneling, you know, are they funneling anyone who might be able to play receiver to receiver? Is it the rise of 7-on-7 leagues? You know, are more athletes getting pushed to wide receiver now than used to be? Or is it just the change of the game? Like what do you think is generating this surplus of talent at this position?
Yeah, I think it's kind of everything. Like, you touched on a lot of really, really smart points there. And so I'll tell a story. My younger brother used to coach junior high and high school football. And I remember him coming home from practice one day. Like, we were out at night and he was like, the weirdest thing is happening. He's like, you know, when we were growing up, everyone wanted to play quarterback and running back. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm the same way. I dreamed of being the next Barry Sanders. But now he's like, everyone wants to play wide receiver. And he said that the turning point was when Odell Beckham made that one-handed catch on Monday Night Football. So many people were watching that at home, and kids were like, wait, I want to do that. And so instead of being in your backyard, you know, pretending to be, you know, John Elway or, you know, Jerry Rice or, you know, Barry Sanders, like we did, it's like everybody wants to be Odell making that one-handed grab. And even like, you know, in small town Missouri where we're from, he said you could see that change. And I think so. There's number one, there's kids that want to play receiver now because the ball's getting thrown more. You know, when I played receiver in high school, all I did was block, right? Like I was just an extra tight end 10 yards away from, you know, from the other tight end. And so I think that has changed things. But, you know, there's more access to 7-on-7 camps that helps a ton. But I do think, you know, long story short, is that the game has changed to make the receiver position much more desirable, where you are getting the ball thrown your way. You are now a quote unquote highlight, you know, position type player. And it's just more fun. Like, you know, I know if I could go back 20 years ago to being a senior in high school, I would have relished playing receiver instead of pouting about not getting to play running back, because you're also getting hit like 6 or 7 times a game instead of 20. So it's kind of a better life as a wide receiver right now. And I do even think, you know, I've heard college prospects say, you know, if I'm a running back, by the time I'm 30, I'm out of the league at receiver, you know, or guys are even talking about playing defense now. You have a longer shelf life. And I think that factors into it.
So let's move from the receivers to the guys who throw to them and ask him about next year. We kept hearing how bad the 2022 QB class was and the team should wait. And it really does seem like the NFL heard that message and agreed with that message. So we know about the top guys, you know, Stroud from Ohio State, Young from Alabama. Besides those guys, are there any other prospects you're really excited for that you think could come in and be that franchise passer for more than just a handful of franchises next year?
Oh gosh, yeah. I think one of the fun things about next year is how many quarterbacks there are. So, like, obviously Bryce Young is the returning Heisman Trophy winner. CJ Stroud, you know, had that great Rose Bowl performance, you know, record-setting day with Jackson Smith and Jigba. But it's a deep class as well, Mike. And I think, you know, Mel and Todd did a podcast where they set the first round over under at like 6.5. So it is guys like Will Levis from Kentucky, Tyler Van Dyke at Miami, Phil Jerkovich at Boston College, who's returning back from an injury. You know, and then there's so many transfer guys who have an opportunity. You know, Spencer Rattler a year ago was touted as a potential number one quarterback. Didn't work at Oklahoma. Now he's at South Carolina. Keaton Slovis, another guy that was touted as a potential riser last year, leaves USC. Now he's at Pitt. You know, so I think there's a ton more talent. And I'm probably even, you know, missing some guys. Reed at BYU is a really, really good player. There's a kid at NC State, Emory, who's a good player. Like, so this year we saw, I think, 7 quarterbacks drafted, which is pretty low. Traditionally, it's closer to 10 to 12. Next year, it's also just a bigger group. I think my summer scouting list for quarterbacks is like 15 players. And so, yeah, it's great that NFL teams listened and they stuck to the grades and said, you know, if Desmond Ridder and Malik Willis and that crew, if they were in the 2021 draft, they would have been picked after guys like Davis Mills. You know, they would have been picked after Kyle Trask. And that's actually where we saw them go, you know, starting at around pick 70. So I think teams were a little bit smarter this year than we gave them credit for.
Matt, we have this thing. It started off just as an accident, and now it's become kind of a running gag where I take the last question, and especially when we're talking to someone that is doing cool work in the industry or that has carved their own path in the industry, to kind of talk about sports media and where it's going and what's next. And that's true, you know, from Peter King to, you know, Ty Dunn went full time with his newsletter, Go Long. I've got a newsletter. You've got a newsletter, The Draft Scout. So after having been like synonymous with Bleacher Report for so long, now you're at the mothership, but you also have your own thing going on. Tell us how that's going and how you think things are changing in this business. People are trying to get in. What's going to be next? Where are things headed?
Yeah, it's, you know, I am in a unique position because I've worked at two of the bigger media houses over the last 12 years and then, you know, took a year sabbatical to kind of find myself and start my own thing. And it's funny, the thing I started is almost becoming traditional in the sense that, you know, there are people that work under me and they are doing, you know, because of my role at ESPN, you know, they're really running the show. And it's just, it's something that we're trying to figure out, you know, what that actually looks like moving forward. Because when I left Bleacher Report, this is going to be a long answer, and I'm sorry. When I left Bleacher Report, I had no idea that ESPN would come calling at all. Like, it wasn't preordained. Wow. I had not taken a meeting with ESPN. It was just like, you know what? I didn't really like the direction Bleacher Report was headed in terms of football coverage and especially NFL draft coverage. You know, there had been a lot of turnover in the executive ranks. And I just, you know, kind of felt like I was getting pushed out a little bit. And so it was like, I'm going to just leave and bet on myself like I did when I went to Bleacher Report. And the Draft Scout was, you know, that bet on myself. And it worked really, really well. You know, from any way you want to measure it, it was an improvement for me over life at Bleacher Report. And then obviously, you know, ESPN comes calling. And for my industry, you can't say no to that. Like, you can't say no to, like, hey, do you want to work with Mel Kiper? Like, you know what? I'm just going to stay out here on my own. It's like, no, of course I want to work with Mel Kiper, you know? So I will always support people that want to bet on themselves, though. Like, anyone that ever, you know, is at a traditional spot and is like, man, I feel like I'm being held back or I'm not getting to do the things I want to do. Or, you know, I threatened to quit Bleacher Report for like 4 years because they weren't giving me a podcast, which, seriously, think about that in 2022. Wow. Like, everybody has a podcast, right? And they were like, no, you can't have one. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to leave then. They're like, okay, never mind. Here you go. So yeah, I just think, you know, I get asked all the time. People are like, you know, I come from a non-traditional background. I did not go to journalism school. And people are like, what would you do if you could talk to yourself 15 years ago? And I would say, number one, like, create your own opportunity. And number two, don't give up, because there will be moments where you're like, is this a hobby or is it a job? And you just got to push through that. And I think creating your own opportunity is easier than ever. You know, if you don't have a TikTok and a YouTube at this point to grow a brand and grow an audience, like, you're probably messing up. And I say that as someone who doesn't do either thing because I work at ESPN. But if you were trying to start out in this industry, it's free to have a YouTube channel. It's free to have a TikTok. It's free to have an Instagram. It's free to have a Twitter. And use this. Those things are your resume. You know, I've never submitted a resume for a journalism job that I have ever. And it's always been, here's my work. And if you like it, cool. And if you don't, no big deal. You know, they didn't ask for a cover letter when I went to ESPN. So I think just, you know, your work is your resume, and, you know, treat people well. And a lot of folks in this industry are willing to help you out if you approach it the right way.
Amen. All right. Well, Matt, where can people follow all the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So like I said, no TikTok or YouTube for me. You can follow me on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. That's kind of where all my, you know, it's mostly like me talking about bourbons and cigars that I like, but there is some football sprinkled in between Labor Day and Memorial Day. It's a lot of football over the summer. It's mostly complaining about the Royals and talking about other things outside of football.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on and talking football as we are entering the summer here. Matt, appreciate the time so much. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me on. Have a good one.
You too. Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider, also impresario at the Draft Scout on Substack right here. When we get back on Three and Out, we are going to finish over, under, or push win totals, this time for the NFC West, right here on Three and Out, your national NFL podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back on Three and Out, your national NFL podcast. Fantastic stuff from Matt. So glad to catch up with him. So much cool stuff. But we have got to finish what we started Monday morning. Again, if you were live on Twitter Spaces, then you know that we were breaking down last week and this week from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern over, under, or push for win totals for all of the NFL teams. And in both cases, we got through three divisions but didn't get through the last one. So it's the NFC West. We're going to go over, under, or push and why for each of the NFC West teams. And guys, this is a fascinating case study, I think, with the NFC West. Last year was an absolute meat grinder of a division. We had, you know, two teams from that division make an extremely strong push for the Super Bowl. One make it, one win it. And they were, you know, not necessarily the two strongest teams in that division. But the Seahawks have called it. They've punted on the Russell Wilson era. Russ is taking his talents to Denver, where, of course, they have very good food there. Russ will cook in a different mountainous city. Meanwhile, we get Drew Lock in Seattle, and Vegas has 5.5 wins. And guys, this is juiced slightly. It's minus 120 for the over. So they do think Vegas does like the Seahawks to get past this. But do you like the Seahawks to get past this, Samantha?
You said 5.5, right?
5.5.
No, I'm taking the under. I mean, talk to me. If this ends up being the Baker Mayfield slot, which I'm 99% sure it absolutely will not be, then yeah, we can have a different conversation and adjust our opinions on this accordingly. But I'm not buying anything that Drew Lock is selling. And this team is just not in a position to kind of overcome Drew Lock with what else they have going on. They feel very directionless to me. They play in an incredibly tough division with three other teams that are just going to be an absolutely brutal matchup for them every single time they play. I will take the under.
Yeah, I'll go under as well. The difficulty with the Seahawks is they have so many pieces that over the last couple of years have gotten better, but they were all getting better towards like a singular purpose. And with Russell Wilson gone, it's really not completing the puzzle or restocking or rebuilding or whatever way you want to put it, however you want to wordplay. It's just hanging on for dear life at this point. And I'm not sure the team is mentally tough enough, which is really weird to say about a Pete Carroll team, but I'm not sure this iteration of the Seahawks is mentally tough enough to really rally around someone like Drew Lock or, you know, whoever ends up playing quarterback for them when things don't look good from the start. And so it's probably a handful of wins against interdivisional foes. Like they've always given the Seahawks, or sorry, they've always given the 49ers a hard time. They've always given the Rams a hard time. They've always, you know, the Cardinals historically have not done very well against Pete Carroll. So you can probably sneak 2 to 4 wins from that group. But where are the rest of the wins coming from? I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100% sure you are good enough to go toe-to-toe, not only within your division, but even a really bad NFC when Drew Lock is your quarterback and your entire team is probably going to spend this season roughly somewhere between listless and giving up.
Yeah, I'm going to go under also. I do think Pete Carroll can probably get something out of this group, and I like, in a vacuum, I like what they did with the draft. And just go ahead. No, actually, we need talented players on the offensive line. And Kenneth Walker III, of course, hashtag Spartan dog. I'm still not sure how he went from like lock to or, you know, favorite to win the Heisman like 9 weeks into the college season and then wasn't even a finalist because he didn't do anything wrong. He's a good running back. I like, but this is still a team where, okay, if you invest in the offensive line in a way that you didn't with Russell Wilson, and you add a running back to a stable of running backs when Pete Carroll's pretty much always been able to get production out of guys, even without Marshawn Lynch. Like, okay, you've got this running game and you've got these receivers who are ideal to pair with Russell Wilson in it, and you have no Russell Wilson. You add Noah Fant, who I like, but at the end of the day, you're still talking about this is going to be a team that runs first, second, and probably fourth, you know, when given the opportunity. And then you are still asking a quarterback to make up the difference offensively. And it ain't the Legion of Boom on the other side of the ball. And I just don't see how this works. I don't see how a run first, second, and fourth offense wins games in the NFL when on third down, you're asking Drew Lock to move the sticks with a wing and a prayer. I just don't see it working out. I agree with you guys. I am under on the Seahawks. And then it's a long climb back up the charts, you guys, to get to the Cardinals at 9 wins. This is a team that, like, you know, that went 9-9. It took them 9 games to win 9 games last year. Now we're saying 9 wins total. We all know the momentum fall off towards the end of last season and the fizzling in the postseason and the memery that's been going on. Are you guys over or under or pushing 9 wins for the Cardinals?
So I think this might be, if not the hardest, one of the hardest teams to assess, because we have had so much weird off-field chaos stuff going on and nobody really knows how resolved that is going to be. And when you put that together with what happened to them last year, it's a little bit tough to reconcile with the amount of talent that's on that team. So, I mean, my instinct is to like split the difference and say, I'll push, because that always seems like the smart play when you're like, oh man, I could go either direction. I don't know. It's an even number. Let's push. But also, you know, it's the NFC is so weak this year. It's so weak. It has so many mediocre to bad teams in it that if I'm playing the odds and I'm looking at Arizona's schedule, even though you have two really, really tough customers in your own division, I'm going to take the over here, or call it the barely over.
Hey, well, and I'll say before you go, Shadi, Samantha, if you were to make a wager with actionnetwork.com's lines here, this is actually juiced to the over. So if you wanted to bet under 9, you would need to bet 130 to win 100. But if you take over, you bet 100 and you'd win 110 if they did. So this is actually juiced so that like they're trying to get you to bet the over because people are hitting the under very hard. And okay, all right. So I feel like the same thing. Shadi, what do you think?
I'm going to take the over as well. I mean, obviously the new Hopkins suspension is the biggest thing to worry about, but you still have
I keep forgetting about that.
Bunch of games after that. I mean, he's not suspended for the entire season. So if you can win a quarter of your games without him, all of a sudden you're barreling down on, you know, maybe being one of the better teams in the NFL, as you were last season when you rattled off 9 straight for the 2/3 of the season after the suspension. So I'm going to go with over, probably barely over as well. I think they do have some things to figure out, but the one thing I do like is you have some more weapons at play. I think they've continued to draft really well, bring in free agents pretty well. I think they're getting better as a football team. Yes, they were listless at the end of last season. yes, you know, the quarterback and coaching and all of the chemistry stuff is, you know, potentially going to boil to the forefront this year, but I'm not betting on that. I'm betting that they just get to work and end up being a really, really good football team once again. And then when Nuke Hopkins comes back, they're going to be a playoff contender. I don't think they're going to be the unbeatable team we saw for much of last year, but I think they're going to be very, very good.
Yeah, this is now year four of Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. And after each of the previous seasons, it's like, oh, they started super hot and then faded. Defenses have figured them out. These guys were a flash in the pan. And like that happened after they went 5-10-1. That happened after they went 8-8. That happened after they went 11-6. It's like, okay, like I understand why those narratives existed and why that's the attitude. But this has been nothing but an upward trajectory from the end of the 1 year Steve Wilkes era, the Josh Rosen era. And I think you look at this team, you look at the 9 wins, and you look at the amount of talent on it. It's like, yo, 9 wins. They can get to 9 wins. They can get to 10 wins. They don't have to get to 13, 14 to hit this number. And they may not get to 13. They may not get to 12. They may not win this division. They may not capitalize on how good it looked like they were last year. But I think they're going to beat 9 wins. I will also take the over. Go up even further, you guys. NFC West 49ers at 10 wins. This is even Steven on the juice. It's 10 wins over, under, or push for a San Francisco 49ers team that still has both Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance on its roster. Samantha, what do you think?
I was probably going to take the over no matter what it was. So I'm kind of glad it's 10 because I was a little bit worried it would be 11 and that made me nervous. But look, as long as Jimmy Garoppolo is still in the building, I believe he will ultimately end up with the starting job there. And I'm a huge believer in Jimmy Garoppolo and his ability to get the job done, even if it's sort of hideous a lot of the time on the way there. So, you know, they're going to make a fool of me if Lance is out there and it's like a learning year. But I don't think they're going to do that. There's way too much talent on this team. I don't think Lance is fully ready. And I don't think that you're going to waste that when you still have Jimmy in the building. So much talent on both sides of the ball. I know, I mean, with Debo, we have an issue with, you know, disgruntled Debo, who's probably not going anywhere, potentially a quarterback issue. Yeah. I know. I have some questions about how far they can really get. I'm not sure I think they can get as far as they did a year ago, but I absolutely think they are good for more than 10 regular season wins.
Yeah, taking the over here as well. And I would go way over. Like, even if it was 11, 12, I'd probably still be taking the over. I don't love Trey Lance coming in as like, quote unquote, the answer. I don't know. Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't the answer either. I think that he had a ceiling. He wasn't going to put a bad team on his back and you know, go to town. But he was a guy who led this team very, very, very well. And Trey Lance has to earn that. Trey Lance has to earn, you know, my trust, all of our trust as a playoff caliber quarterback. He's a very good prospect. He's got all of the tools, but he's not who Jimmy Garoppolo has been from a leading this team specifically standpoint. So that being said, lots of different things can happen. And I think if anyone has earned our trust, you know, going with that theme, it's Shanahan. I mean, he's taken rookie quarterbacks like RG3 before. He's taken this run heavy, super, just throw everything at the line of scrimmage and hopes it sticks sort of offense, and done a lot of good things with it with much lesser athletes than Trey Lance. So I believe that this team as a whole is good enough to win double digit games. Anything that Trey Lance gives them over and above being a replacement level quarterback, they are a, you know, playoff win, two playoff win sort of contender. And honestly, if Trey Lance goes down and Jimmy Garoppolo is still on that team and healthy, I don't dislike them to do the same exact thing. So as much as I sort of like what their offense is probably going to look like with Trey Lance, I do not know if there is a team that's like floor or their baseline I would trust more this season at about 10 games than the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, I'm... On our AFC side of the ball, you know, side of the bracket, we had a lot of disagreement, a lot of really interesting perspectives. We've been agreeing a lot. So I'm just going to go push just to get a different opinion on the board for the NFC West. But I agree, this is a very high floor team, just way too much talent, and it's talent in the trenches. You know, it's on both sides of the ball. It's a strong team. It's a balanced team. It's a well-coached team. And whether it's Jimmy G or Trey Lance pulling the trigger, I have faith in Kyle Shanahan that he'll know which one to be pulling which trigger and when. So yeah, put me down for push for 10. But again, wouldn't be surprised if they go over, would be very surprised if they go under. Speaking of over, there's one team with a win total over the 49ers 10 in the NFC West, and it is the LA Rams, defending Super Bowl champions. They're actually in a three-way tie for the third highest number at 10.5, along with the Cowboys and the Chiefs. Only the Packers at 11 and Bills and Bucks at 11.5 are ahead of them. Guys, what do we think? 10.5 wins for the LA Rams, over or under? Shadi, you're up first.
I mean, it's got to be over, right? Like,
yeah.
The only thing that would make it under is if Matthew Stafford has like one of his lingering injuries and other things go wrong. Like, that's the thing. Like, the Detroit Lions, when he was on that team, was like a 6-win sort of baseline team. And then whatever would happen to Stafford throughout that season would determine whether it was over or under the 6. Now, I think the Rams are right there. They're like a 10.5 baseline team. And if Matthew Stafford stays healthy the whole season, it's like a 16-win season. If things go really poorly, you know, a player or two gets injured, like, you know, Woods did last season, or if Matthew Stafford gets like a lingering, you know, back thing that's affecting his play, then you start talking about, you know, hey, maybe it's like an 8-win season, but it would take just a ton. I mean, it's still such a great defense. I think they've gotten better defensively. I think the offense has a chance to be very good. They're still working on signing Odell. Like, this is just going to be a really good team. And quite frankly, this, you know, 10.5 almost seems low to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, I'm always hesitant to bet positively on the previous Super Bowl winner because we have that Super Bowl bounce that usually doesn't go in the right direction. It's incredibly hard to repeat a performance that was that good a second year in a row. So even without any, you wouldn't need to know anything about the Rams to know that they're probably going to do at least marginally worse than they did a year ago, right? You could say that about anybody after they win the Super Bowl. But 10.5 regular season game, it doesn't mean they're going to be bad. And 10.5, okay, look, if we gave the over, most of us did, at 11.5 to Tampa and Buffalo, I can give the Rams the 11 here. I was nervous. I thought this was going to be 11, and I was thinking, do I push? Do I go over? I don't know. Can we win 12 games? I'm not sure. But 10.5 is an easy one for me. I mean, this is still an incredibly talented team. And like Shadi said, I mean, unless there's some sort of catastrophic injury news, I don't see this team winning less than 11 games. I'll take the over.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you guys. Obviously, I was Mr. Rams Team of Destiny last year. I was all over the Rams. And I am also Mr. It's very hard to repeat. It's very hard to repeat. It's very hard to come close to repeating. You know, a lot of things have to go right. And a lot of things did have to go right for the Rams in terms of winning these late games, you know, holding off Tom Brady's comeback attempt in the one playoff game. You know, they had to catch some breaks along with everything that they did. So, you know, but they've gone out and been aggressive in replacing talent. You know, they let Bobby Trees go, but they brought in Allen Robinson. They let Von Miller walk, but they brought in Bobby Wagner. You know, and these guys aren't one for one, obviously, but it's like pieces are going out the door. But evolution is happening and they're making big moves to restock with talent. And, you know, I still think that the combination of Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay, and Cooper Kupp is just going to be good enough to beat people a lot of times, especially when Aaron Donald did not retire. And you re-signed Leonard Floyd. You know, a lot of these, you have some of the guys who were hurt, Jordan Fuller, you know, in the secondary coming back. And everything adds up to over for me here. Obviously, it's tough to win 11 games in the NFL, but this is a team that has more than enough talent to do it. It's coached more than well enough to do it. And guys, make sure you are subscribing to us because we love doing it. We love recording this show. We love making it for you. We love it when we are in your ears. tell a friend, spread the word, share on Twitter at 3OutPod, on Instagram at 3OutPod, we're on Facebook. Check out 3OutPod.com for all of our episodes and everything else that we're doing. I would like love to get guests like Matt Miller in, you know, top insiders, big names, smart people who make you smarter. That's what we do. We love to keep doing it right here on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. Man, hashtag relatable, huh? There'd been some executive shakeup at Bleacher Report, and I felt like I was getting pushed out. And I kept being like, hey, can I do this? Can I do this? And they're like, no, you can't. I'm like, wow, I've never heard that story before.
Yeah, as soon as he was like, I threatened to quit like four times because of blank. It's a totally reasonable request. And you're like, oh yes,
sounds about right. Oh boy, Bleacher Report. Yeah, didn't like the direction they were heading for the content strategy. No kidding.